Sorry.
Can't go with the comedy for a hearing.
Good evening, members of the board. John Tracy from Young Conaway, Starnet & Taylor here on behalf of the applicant, Selco Partnership. I have with me tonight Andrew Peterson, who some of the board are familiar with as our RF engineer, Pete Tekulis from Mazur Consulting, who's our civil engineer, and Sue Manchell, who's our site acquisition specialist. I don't know, Jamie, how you want to swear them in, but they should probably be sworn in.
Yeah, let's, if they could all come up, we'll swear you in, and then I guess, Mr. Tracy, you can call them up as need be. We'll try to keep everyone socially distant. Come on, Mr. Peterson, if you would. Just podium here. That way we can.
Okay.
Yeah, we're a little different than normal, so just state your name and address for the record.
Andrew Peterson, 3230 Water Street Road, Collegeville, Pennsylvania.
And do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Can you state your name and address for the record?
Sue Manchell, 104 Christian Street, Philadelphia, PA, 19147.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. Last but not least.
Hey, you know, my first name is Petros, P-E-T-R-O-S. Last name is Chakalas, T as in Tom, S as in Sam, O-U-K-A-L-A-S. I'm at 2000 Atlantic Drive, Mount Laurel, New Jersey, 08054.
And do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp.
I'm going to have Mr. Peterson stay up here because he will be my first witness when we get to that point. And at the outset, I want to say that I appreciate very much the efforts of the Sussex County Board of Adjustment to try to be normal in these times. I will tell you, this is the first face-to-face hearing I've had in the state since March, so it's kind of nice to be back. I also say that I also appreciate the effort to prove to myself that I could still button the neck button and button my dress slacks, which I also have not had to wear since March of this year, so that was good as well. But we are here before the board for a application for a new telecommunications monopole and associated equipment shelter. The tower is 150 feet in height, and that includes the 5-foot lightning rod. It is located, as you can see from the exhibit, on a property along 113 south, or I guess west, depending on your directions, in between Millsboro and Dagsboro. In fact, it's just either east or north of the intersection with Route 20 on 113. The property itself is roughly 6 acres in size. It's zone C1. And as you can see from the photos, it's engaged in an active commercial use, self-storage, both in buildings and on the property. The tower will be proposed to be located on an already paved portion of this site in an area that's used for vehicle storage and some other machinery storage. Both sides of 113 in this area are zoned C1, as is some portion of the property across the street and next to us. There's also CR1, GR, and AR1 in this general area. This is, again, an area that's largely dominated by commercial uses up and down 113 and residential and non-residential uses as you move back on Handy Road. The tower meets the height limitations established by the code. It meets the street setbacks established by the code. It will be lighted in accordance with the code. As was mentioned in the outset, we do need one setback variance, which I will discuss a little bit later in this presentation. As the board is aware, we are the holder of an FCC license, which gives us the privilege, obligation, and right to provide reliable cellular service to our subscribers. Per the terms of the FCC license, we are required to provide reliable service and take efforts when we are not providing reliable service or the service is degraded to take steps to upgrade it. As the board is Some of the board has heard me say in the past, but as I think anybody who owns cellular technology realizes, as the times grow, the need and the use and the demand for these services continue to increase exponentially, as everybody in every household seems to have multiple different devices that all rely on cellular technology. And as I think we've learned in the last few months, that demand is not decreasing, it's increasing, because now we're not only using it for what we would normally do, we're using it to work from home, we're using it to educate from home, as well as everything else. It's also, as Andy's RF report noted, one of the many things it noted, in addition to the exponential growth that we're going through right now, is the heavy reliance upon this technology for the 911 network. I think your report noted, Andy, that roughly 70% of the calls that 911 gets generally are coming from cellular technology as opposed from the old landline. So with this growth, with this demand, with the needs, there comes the need to address it by filling the dreaded "can you hear me now" effect when the service isn't good. Add to this the in-building demands and the device demands that I mentioned, plus everybody using these things at one time, what you find is existing coverage, which may be good at 2 o'clock in the morning when hardly anybody's on their service, starts to shrink because everybody's on it. All looking to check, if you're at a football game, checking your fantasy football stats, or at a concert trying to upload videos, you're watching it, you can't do it, but you know there's good coverage there. It's because everybody else is trying to do the same thing, and when everybody's trying to get to the network at once, it has the impact of shrinking the coverage footprint, which further degrades the service. So when we get to these situations, we look to find applications or properties that can accommodate a new tower, as we did here. Our first desire is to co-locate if we can, because it's a lot less expensive if we are co-locating on an existing tower, but more often than not doesn't work because the towers aren't in areas where the coverage is needed, and you'll hear that also in a minute when Andy starts going through his report. So what I would like to do with that introduction is bring Andy in so that he can give you more information as to why we need this facility here and more information about the facility itself. So Andy, Verizon, you are a consultant with Verizon for RF purposes in this?
That's correct, yes.
And how did Verizon come to need a facility in this particular location?
So I don't know if you want to try to pull up their RF design report, or if I mean I can use my slides. If that's,
I don't even know how to find it on this thing. I am my mother's son, so I can't work these things.
I'll attempt to put these in a So many of you have,
I believe many of you have seen this type of propagation modeling before. For those who haven't, first and foremost, we have a map. Most noticeably, we have 113 bisecting the map, running basically north and south. Then there are some black icons that dot the periphery of the map. And then there's a patchwork of colors. The dotted icons are the existing Verizon Wireless facilities. They're on the air servicing customers today. And the icon central to the exhibit is the location of the proposed facility that is the subject of the application. The green areas are illustrating geographical areas where Verizon has strong in-building coverage, and the yellow indicates areas where we have strong in-vehicle coverage. You notice that there is a generally a lack of strong in-building coverage surrounding the proposed facility. So that is the first issue. The second issue that we have here is one that John alluded to a bit, where we have a capacity issue. The facilities that are servicing the areas that are on the periphery of the exhibit, which I can share the details of, they are all experiencing basically an overloading of their resources during the busy hours on the network. And that problem is anticipated to grow. The initial symptoms of that are when we have the spinning wheel, when we're trying to download a movie or upload a business attachment, and that problem only worsens over time historically and is continuing to worsen as the demand for services increases. We don't see a fall off in that demand anytime soon. In fact, just the opposite. So,
in fact, your report noted what Cisco was predicting, that it was going to be 46% increase year over year into the demand for cellular services through 2022?
That's correct. Yeah, there's a...
That's in the report.
In the design report, there is a bar chart that shows some demand growth that's been anticipated and what we have seen, if I can find it here. But yeah, I believe that that's the sevenfold increase in that time frame between 2017 and 22, which equates to 46% compound annual growth. And interestingly, a lot of that growth is in mobile video. So whether that's movies or video, watching teleconferences or streaming things for business, it's all lumped together in mobile video. So there's a large anticipated growth there. And the rest is non-mobile video that's making up that growth.
So when we first started looking in this area, one of the obligations we have with Sussex County is to eliminate any tall structures that are within 2 miles of the chosen site. Now, as we've discussed before, the effective radius is a lot shorter than that, because if you start moving greater distances away, it's not addressing the problem. But we identified 4 structures that were within 2 miles. Now, it's correct, is it not, that 2 of those structures we are already utilizing with antennas, correct?
That's correct. The Verizon site to the north and the one to the east are within that 2 mile radius, and we are already utilizing those as antenna support structures.
Now, the other 2 were both north of the site. One's about a mile away, and then one's further away from that, further north away from us. Why would those sites not work?
So there's a guide tower right about there, about a mile north of the proposed, and then about 3/4 of a mile north of the proposed. So right around here on the exhibit, there is a water tower. They're both too far north to address the issue. As you can see, the in-building service issue is further south, and that capacity issue where we're usually filling that in is on the seam of the network, and as you can see here, that seam is really where we're having the in-building coverage issues, so further to the south. So if we were to utilize either one of those structures, it would really only provide for overly redundant coverage with the existing Millsboro site, which is that lattice tower within the 2 mile radius I mentioned earlier to the north. So we really wouldn't be able to address any of the issues. Beyond all that, the water tank to the north, which is owned by the town of Millsboro up there, they weren't interested in having Verizon as a tenant anyway. But from a radio frequency perspective, that facility wouldn't work.
And you mentioned overly redundant coverage. What's the problem with overly redundant coverage?
Well, when you have 2 sites that are close to one another like that, it's almost as bad as just adding equipment or antennas to an existing site. And that's a question that I get a lot, because it's not obvious that that doesn't work. You know, why doesn't that just add capacity? And the reason is we need to reuse the channels. Verizon has very limited channels. They are a resource that's probably their most valuable resource is their spectrum portfolio. So they only have a certain amount of channels they can use. So what they do is they reuse them over and over from site to site. So when you have sites that are basically on top of one another or too close to one another, those sites would in many ways interfere with one another. Not in the classical sense of what we think of when we're tuning the radio dial and we get static, but they would lessen the ability of one another's the ability of the sites to carry capacity. So that would be the issue if we were to have overly redundant coverage.
So we came to the current site. We are proposing a 150-foot tall monopole on this site. Can you walk the board through the improvements, the presumed improvements that would result from this tower being constructed?
Sure. If we're approved and the facility constructed, we would have up to 12 antennas at an antenna center line of 142 feet. These antennas are basically shaped like a shoebox, except elongated, in this case to about 6 feet in length. They're a foot wide, about a foot deep. It's the typical antenna array that you see on one of these facilities as you drive by. Generally, they're arranged in three sectors that point in three separate directions, and that's what's kind of creating these lobes. If you look at the exhibit, you'll see three lobes. If you kind of take a hard look at these, although they're not perfect, those are the three sectors pointing in those three directions, and the coverage footprint that those create. This facility will be arranged similarly, and then there'll be some ancillary radio equipment that is behind the antennas, remote radio heads that are connected by fiber optic cable to the remainder of the equipment that's on the ground.
And then you have a map that shows what the coverage footprint will look like post the construction.
I do, yeah. Right. Yep. So if we're approved and the facility constructed with the antennas hung, we're at 142 feet. We'll be providing the new green coverage footprint here that we're illustrating, basically covering that 113 corridor and areas beyond with strong in-building coverage.
Okay. And one of the other things that you are required to take a look at as part of this application is the FCC requirements governing outputs and emissions from these facilities. As the board is aware, the FCC has established limits for what types of outputs and how much of those outputs can be generated within a certain distance, and we have to stay below those output levels. And Andy, you conducted an analysis of that as well, and you provided the board with a report.
I did. In summary, using a worst-case conservative analysis, the levels of radio frequency exposure would be less than 1.5% of the applicable standards at all locations surrounding the facility, whether you're in the compound, anywhere surrounding the facility. And there is a chart on page 6 and a table, a corresponding table on page 7 of my report that shows how that power density varies with distance from the facility. It peaks around 500 feet away from the facility at something just shy of 1.5%.
Okay. And then also, you looked at this from an FAA perspective, and the tower, just purely looking at FAA requirements, does not require any lighting, correct?
That's correct. However, the county code does require lighting every 50 feet, and we'll comply.
Okay. Does anyone from the board have any questions for Mr. Peterson?
Yes, please. On the, and this may be later in your proposal, why 150 feet? Why not higher?
Well, the
that's expecting it to go the other way.
Yeah, it's typically, you know, why not lower, or just why that in general. So the one of the designs of the radio frequency engineer is to figure out what that height is. Once we have a location that we know will work, what's that Goldilocks just right height? If we build too short, we may not be covering enough of a footprint to absorb enough traffic or provide enough in-building service. And then we may have to come before the board for an extension of the tower. If we build too tall, we may have some of that overly redundant coverage that I mentioned early, where we have a reduction in the ability of the network to carry as much capacity as possible, where we have mobiles that are being served simultaneously by both of their neighboring sites. So we want very distinct areas of coverage and a little bit of handoff area where to enable the mobility aspect of the network, so that the mobile can hand off from one tower to the next. But we really want to find that just right height. In this case, it's about 140 feet on the antenna center line, which takes us with the height of the antennas and the lightning rod, you know, up to that 150 feet.
And as another side, the county code limits it to 150 feet anyhow. So.
I figured the restriction might be on our side of the table. But
right.
Second question. With the construction of this tower, the word reliability to me is a gray word, mm-hmm. in terms of what it means, because we can say it's reliable. In terms of areas within your mapping that are struggling to either receive, get, or have reliable service, and we'd have to define reliable. What does the construction of the tower do in order to improve? We hear the term connectivity deserts and access points. How does the construction of this attack that problem?
I'll direct, at least initially, I'll direct you to the first exhibit where we illustrate these areas of that are not highlighted green. There's a lot of industrial, commercial use there. There's some residential use. In those areas, users of the Verizon Wireless Network would not have reliable in-building service. And that's something that folks rely upon more than ever these days. And beyond that, there's some interesting statistics on wireless substitution that are included in the design report. Interestingly, these are maintained by the CDC. According to statistics from mid-2019, these are updated roughly every year, and these are all growing at roughly 3% a year. But about a year ago, over 57% of homes only had wireless telephones, right. And that number grows pretty quickly as age groups go down. So that number is 76% in the age group from 25 to 34, as you might imagine. So that is really only made possible when we have that strong in-building service. So that whole phenomenon of wireless substitution can only be achieved through that.
So is it safe to say that the areas that are not receiving good service and or deserts that might exist would be reduced with the construction of the tower?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. And last question, in terms of speed, and if we were to equate speed to reliability, I'm assuming also, again, that the construction of the tower is going to assist in raising the ability to draw service at a speed that's acceptable to...
It will. Throughput speeds will noticeably increase, particularly during times of heavy usage on the network, where they can tend to slow down because, as John mentioned, everybody is trying to do the same thing at the same time.
Thank you. And I guess a comment at the end. I think 46% might be low.
Well, it's funny. I was looking
just
at...
Just a comment.
I was looking at somebody who was here, I think, about a year ago, and they were looking at the Cisco stats as well, and it was 42%. You know, and it's funny because you talk about reliable and you hear the conversation about in building, and there's a discussion on reliable in page 7 of his design report. But when we were doing this 20 years ago, the focus was purely on your car, you know, and that was, nobody was thinking about in building, in your houses or whatever. And it shows how rapidly, once we all get these things and we're using them everywhere, we're now upset when we can't use them in a building. And so it's evolved from this in-vehicle coverage to in-building coverage being the new standard. So did anyone have any other questions for Andy?
I just wonder what the whole county cover is.
Well,
if you were to look at the whole county, what would, what would we be looking at?
You're kind of looking at a microcosm. Obviously, we can't zoom out here and see. And where there's less population, generally, you're going to see less green and even less yellow. Or other way around, less yellow and even less green. Most of the major throughways are going to look like this, where they're covered. Maybe they need a little capacity help, a little in-building help like we have here. But some of the more rural areas will be a little bit less covered. Population centers are always, you know, where can you help the most people the fastest? But Verizon continues to build in all those areas, and we've done a number of sites in rural areas, suburban areas, throughout Sussex County.
I mean, I can speak from where I live in New Castle County. That map where I live, which is on the Pennsylvania border, there would be very little green in my neighborhood and even less yellow, because I have to go outside to make a call. But I can sit in my driveway in my car or walk around my house to find that spot and maybe get a call. Outside, but inside, forget about it. And we are one of those purely purely wireless homes that he was talking about.
Verizon makes a box that'll go in your house.
I have it, and it hasn't, you know, we had the original design, and it worked pretty well. Then we got the second design, and it doesn't work very well. So I tell people, call me, email me. That's the best way to get me. Any other questions for Andy before I bring Pete up for a couple of things? Okay. Thank you, Andy.
Thanks.
Pete, you want to come up here for just a couple of specific questions? And if you could just introduce yourself to the board again.
Sure. My name is Petros Chakalis. I work for Mesa Consulting, the civil engineer project.
And your firm did the civil site work for this application, correct?
Correct.
And could you just walk the board just typically what's within the compound before I ask you a couple of questions about the issue we're confronting here?
So the type of tower that Verizon is proposing to install is a 145-foot monopole, which is a tubular steel tower. The tower is going to be affixed to the ground in a with a site-specific foundation, and around that tower is where the equipment's going to go at the base of the tower. The equipment that we're going to be using is cabinet type equipment, which looks like a large refrigerator. There's three cabinets that we're going to be installing, and a standby generator that will be there just in case we have a hurricane coming our way now. So if power goes out and the site, a site like this one is, has the power cut to it, it's actually in use when the generator goes on. So people can actually call and make sure that their loved ones are fine. Around that will be a fenced compound, approximately 30 by 50. It's a trapezoid, so it's the numbers at the bottom are a little bit off. The compound itself will be located, I don't know if you want to bring up the site plan.
Oh, this is the exhibit that we have right here.
Okay.
Yeah. We have it in our
Oh, okay. So on the site plan page, we're proposing the compound on the southeastern corner of the property. The monopole itself will be approximately 23 feet from the eastern property line and 67 feet from the southern property line.
And this exhibit that the board sees up here kind of summarizes in part why we're looking to do this. This was not raw land, which is what most of my applications come to the board. In fact, almost all my applications come before. This site is actually developed, and we're using an existing developed portion of the property to do that. But as you notice, there's a number of constraints besides the buildings. There's the existing stormwater facility. There are the existing septic fields and associated infrastructure with that. And there's different utilities that are working through the site, so that we were forced to use that corner that's essentially near the entrance, which we also needed to avoid the entrance in order to
Correct.
Accommodate that. Now, because we're proximate to the property line, and you know, I know how these things are designed in any way, but in here we do some design modifications to ensure that there's
a theoretical failure point on the tower, so that if there is, these towers are designed per code, per the proposed loading. So this tower itself will be proposed and designed to support not only our equipment, Verizon's equipment, but an additional three carriers. At this point, we don't even have a fourth carrier, so it's going to be over-designed, but it will also be designed that can collapse upon itself, theoretically.
So, and there's a letter, for a structural letter that's in the file for that. Now, obviously, even if it was 50 feet, given the height, you know, that same safety would be employed in terms of designing it, but we have a letter from the structural engineer that talks about it specifically in this. Does anyone have any questions for Pete? That's the overview of the application. Now, as I mentioned, as Pete was just discussing, we do need one variance in this application, which is unusual in the sense I don't think I've ever asked for a variance in one of these applications before. As you can see from the design, while the site is 6 acres in size, it is pretty unique. It's very narrow. It's got two road frontages on either side. It's in an area, as I mentioned, that has a lot of development on the property as well. That being said, we actually would be able to meet the setback, but for the fact that there's a very small commercial lot that's cut out behind where we, where our property was. If this was just a straightforward property line, we would have been able to meet the setback. But there's a small, I think it's about a quarter acre lot that's in there, zone commercial like our piece is, but that doesn't allow us to meet the setback in the area, which is why we are asking for the variance on the setback. As the board is aware, there's two different standards that are at play here. The first is the special use standard, the substantially adverse standard. In this instance, as with most instances that I've been before you on, I'll say all instances I've been before you on, we don't believe there's an adverse effect, much less a substantially adverse impact from this facility on any properties. It is in a decidedly commercially zoned area and a heavy commercial use. Route 113 carries a lot of traffic, and the intersection of Route 20 is just off the view from below there, so that carries a lot of traffic back and forth as well. But these things, they sit there, they don't do anything other than provide cellular service. They don't generate any traffic. There's one trip in or out, in and out about every 6 weeks for maintenance. There's no smells. There are no taxing of county resources. They're obviously not generating any school children. And they're not using the county sewer system or anything of that nature. So there's not an impact, much less the substantially adverse impact that's with this facility. With regard to the variance, that standard is also, I think, very familiar to the board, and I think is met in this instance. Several of the instances, I think, are fairly straightforward, not created by the applicant. We're coming to the property as it is. We didn't create any of these subdivisions or the existing uses that are there. It is the minimum variance that we need. We cannot push it further away because then it's in the middle of one of the entrances to the site, and it's also closer to that one lot that is on the rear, meaning we would need a variance there. I don't believe this will alter the essential character. It is commercially zoned here and across Route 13, as well as immediately across Handy Road as well. It's a diagonal zoning line that cuts through the way, so there's commercial next to us before it goes to GR and AR. It is a somewhat unique property in the sense of the existing development and subdivision pattern, plus slightly off screen from what you're looking at, but on the opposite side of those commercial structures are actually residentially zoned lots. So it made sense to focus the tower on the commercial side of the property as opposed to the residential side of the property. And it cannot otherwise be developed. I'm looking at that in terms of this specific use here. These uses, obviously, as you heard Andrew talk about, need to be in specific locations. And once you find those locations, you have to find willing landlords who are willing, ready, and able to accommodate the facility. This landlord was able to do so, but because of the layout of the property and the existing constraints on the property, there were very limited opportunities in which to locate this, which is why we're choosing it to locate in the identified area, which necessitates the need for the variance in this standpoint. So with that, I will pause. I'm happy to take any other questions.
I have no questions.
I have no questions.
Is there anyone here in favor of the application? Is there anyone here in opposition of the application? And I'm sorry, Mr. Sharp, did you have a question?
Just one. I didn't know if Mr. Tracy had somebody to affirm the statements that he's made on the record.
I guess I'll have Pete and Andy come back up and affirm them just to clear the record. So Andy, if you could come up, and Pete, if you could come up.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Andy, to the extent that I was offering any testimony with regard to the RF capabilities of this facility or needs for this facility, was I truthful and accurate?
You are.
Thank you.
Sure.
And Pete, to the extent that I was offering any testimony on civil engineering or site characteristics, was I truthful and accurate?
You are.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe when I introduced the application, I announced the variance as being 23 feet from 50. But then having looked at the survey, it says 23 feet from the site boundary to the monopole. So, Mr. Jobs, looking over here, it's 27 feet from the 50.
Yeah, that's what I understood it as.
Thank Operator. You.
If anyone on the line is in favor of or in opposition to this application, please dial 5-star. All right, I have Andy on the line. Andy, please state your name and your address.
Andy Stern, 308 Culver Street, New Beach. We grew up for opposition to the application.
Mr. Shrine, do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you. You may proceed.
Yeah, I represent the owner of the property, pdstores.com. We were approached by Verizon with this location, and I know we kind of went through the whole site. I think you guys pretty much explained in a lot more detail than I probably can, but there was really only a couple, you know, logical locations, and there were some constraints on our end and certainly some constraints on their end. I know we wanted to maybe look at it by the stormwater pond, and I think that affected the stability of the tower, and it's also difficult to get the utilities to. So we kind of came up with the only location that made sense for this to be placed on. Obviously this is a commercial or industrial use, but there's some logic to doing the tower in this location. So they came to us, we were able to kind of find a way that it made sense. It wasn't going to negatively affect our business. It was in a location that they wanted and needed. It was where they could get utilities to service. It's by the rear entrance, so they've got access to get to it when they need to. So I'm in favor of it. I think it's obviously we all use our cell phones more and more than ever before. I think the one commissioner's comments of 47% a year is probably perhaps understating it, but I'm in support. So, thank you for your
time. Thank you. If anyone on the line is in favor of or in opposition to this application, please dial 5-star.
Thank you. Any other questions from members of the board? Mr. Sharp?
I have no further questions. I did want to just remind the board that not only does this one have the variance and special use standards, but we also have the cell tower standards found in 115-194.2. So just wanted to bring that to your attention.
No other questions. I'll close the public hearing and entertain a motion.
Mr. Sharp, do we need two motions?
No, you can do it as one motion.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve case number 12459 for DE Storage, Celco Partnership, doing business as Verizon Wireless, and that the motion number one be for a special use exception to construct the 150-foot tall telecommunications monopole. I don't believe it will substantially affect or adversely the uses of the neighboring or adjacent properties. And secondly, a variance to permit the construction of the same pole, 27 feet from the southeastern property line. Again, I don't believe that it will alter the essential character of the neighborhood, and that the variance represents the minimum necessary to afford relief in the modification to the regulation at issue. And I, for the record, that all cell tower standards are be in play with both motions.
And Dr. Carson, I think you had said it was 27 feet from the southeastern corner. My understanding it was 23 feet, but it was a 27-foot variance.
Correct.
Is that correct, Mr. Whitehouse?
I would amend my motion to reflect that.
Thank you.
That's correct. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. Mr. Williamson?
Aye.
Mr. Workman?
Aye for reasons stated.
Dr. Carson?
Aye for my reasons.
Mr. Corman?
Aye for the reasons stated.
And I too for the reasons. So with a vote of 5-0, the application is approved.